This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Andy Krause. He is Principal Data Scientist at Greenfield Advisors and AVM Analytics. Andy, welcome. How are you?
I am well. Thank you, Jason.
Good. Good to have you on the show. And we were talking a little bit offline here before we started about automated valuation models. That's what AVM stands for. This is the bots and the algorithms are taking over the world, aren't they?
They certainly are. It's invading all aspects of our lives. So I think that it's happening in real estate is no surprise.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest AVM that everybody listening will be familiar with is Zillow, you know, the Zestimate, right? Whether it be a rent Zestimate or a sale price Zestimate. And everybody's got their opinions on how accurate they are, how inaccurate they are. And, you know, I'd say they're both. What I like to tell our listeners is, look, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It's better than what we used to have, and we used to have nothing. So these AVMs, they're a guide, but they're not the holy grail yet, are they? Each house is so different. I remember I looked at on Zillow recently at one of my old homes that I owned in Orange County, California, and I sold it for, I think, what I sold for, like $911,000. The property was pretty unique. It had a pretty unique lot, unique view, not similar to the rest of the homes in the neighborhood. And I think that's where the models really struggles, when you get a really unique property. Kind of take us through the science of this and the accuracy of it.
Sure, sure. And I think the example you just gave is really illustrative in terms of how and when AVMs are good and when they're not. So in terms of the science of it, you know, it is, after all, a model. And for any model, AVM or any sort of mathematical model that's out there, it's only as good as the data that goes into it. So when you do run against a unique property like that, the model is going to struggle. And in terms of the science of it, I think people often get the impression that, you know, there are these massive kind of black boxes that are doing some sort of strange magic underneath it. And to some extent, that's true. You know, the formulas can be quite complex, and the terms and the models are things that a lot of people have never heard of. But at the end of the day, it's really trying to mimic what an appraiser does. It's really trying to look at what have sales in the local neighborhood done recently? What are the trends there? How do various factors influence value? And how do we convert all that into a prediction?
Sure.
So at the heart of it, it's not much different than what your local appraiser is doing. It's just doing it at scale.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, in fairness to AVMs, we should say that appraisers are—they make mistakes all the time. So
right.
They have their own accuracy problems, don't they?
Right. And I think what often gets left out of the conversation is that we don't know how wrong appraisers are. Mm-hmm. We don't ever actually do tests to see. We don't do, hey, let's have seven appraisers appraise this home and then see what it sells for 2 weeks later. We don't do that.
Well, that is a real, I'm so glad you said that, because I want to sort of couch that a slightly different way. Wouldn't it be nice if there was a database, and I don't think there is one, I may be wrong, but I really doubt there is one, of final appraised values on properties versus actual sales prices within, say, a month or something like that. So, you know, you knew it was the same time. Because remember, folks, the ultimate appraisal on any property is a meeting of the minds between a ready, willing, and able buyer and a ready, willing, and able seller. When those two minds meet and the contract is signed, that is the best appraisal in the world, bar none. Everything less than that is an educated guess, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's very well put. That everything short of the two people meeting really is just one person's estimate, or in this case, a model's estimate.
Yeah, absolutely. So to go back to what you just said, which is really fascinating, and the fact that there is, I guess, no database of appraised value versus sales prices, you know, I always like to talk about how you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. And like you said, there is no test to test the accuracy of appraisers because there's no database. I mean, there needs to be a database like this, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are two things stopping it, and then I'll maybe talk about how it might be a reality. I think that the first thing stopping is obviously price. I think a lot of people would love to do these sort of tests, but in order to have seven appraisers do a home, okay, so that's a couple $1,000 for one home. And if you actually want to come up with some statistically meaningful estimate of how, if there's appraisal error and how much, you need to do that thousands and thousands of times. So there's just kind of a cost and time prohibition to it. And not only that, you need a house that's probably hasn't been listed yet that truly is sort of off the market to do this to and then have it turn around and sell quite quickly. Mm-hmm. You just have a market dynamics that are kind of preventing that as well. It's two things that make that really difficult. Now, that's not to say it'll never happen. I mean, what I think we see in the industry of AVMs and real estate data more in general is like a lot of places, there's consolidation. And you know, many of the mortgage big appraisal management corporations, the AMCs, are slowly being bought up. You know, CoreLogic has purchased some of those companies. Some of the other big players are looking at that as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know the rationale, but there's a lot of data that comes with those appraisal management companies.
Right. And that could lead to what I just hope for, that database. You know, if you do see a roll-up now, I hate the big corporatocracy and the monopolistic or duopoly type of thing, but it does have some benefits too. That is, you can get really clean, good data when it's not so fragmented, right? And so something like all these buyouts with CoreLogic and so forth, that could lead to some better data to make better AVMs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That is the other side of that coin. You know, as consumers, sometimes we can suffer from monopolistic movements, but with it, sometimes
some good stuff comes out of it too.
Yeah. So
it's a mixed bag. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead with what you're saying, though.
Yeah. So I think just with the database, I mean, I think as a researcher and a developer in this space, I would love that database. You know, I mean, there's many of us who would absolutely love to have that sort of data, but it just really doesn't exist at the moment. So mm-hmm. when it hopefully does, it'll be interesting to see how well appraisers do. I suspect that they do quite well in many places. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think appraisers should fear that. I think that they should relish that because, you know, they have the local knowledge that the models often don't.
So. Right. Use it as a tool rather than fearing it. Okay, so correct. How do these AVMs work? I mean, take us through kind of some of the details. I mean, probably everybody sort of has a simplistic view. I do, at least I'll speak for myself. You know, hey, look, there's a computer database. You've got all these prices in there. You've got maybe certain remarks in the remarks section of the MLS listing. Got a bedroom and bath count, square footage. What do they really do behind the scenes to come up with these valuations?
So I think you hit on one of the most important things, and I think I mentioned this earlier, is really the data that goes into it. And you know, a lot of the bigger firms that are doing AVMs, you've got to have a really solid database behind it. And it's a combination of, you know, your local tax assessor who has information on, you know, the home size, all that, biased as they may be, combining that with MLS data. That was sort of, if you look at AVMs a decade ago, that was kind of where the data stopped. What we see moving forward is this movement into, as you hinted at, text analysis, kind of the natural language processing of the remarks. You also see people starting to use image data. So whether it's an aerial image or Google Street View, trying to just slowly gather more information. And the two pieces of information that are always the hardest for AVMs to measure are condition and quality. It's really hard to know what's inside a house. And it's really hard to understand the quality of that home without having an inspection done, or, you know, all the things that an appraiser does. So AVM companies have been really working hard to gather information on condition and quality, and that's through the photos and through the listing information. So all the improvements you see that, you know, Zillow is listing other errors going down, and House Canary says, you know, they've got an error around 3%, and these people are publishing their error rates. A lot of those improvements are made by image processing and looking at the natural language processing of the comments.
Okay, so they process the natural language, but what else happens, really? What is the software doing to come up with a value?
Sure. So in sort of a nutshell, it's trying to find comps. That's maybe the easiest way to do it. It's not in the traditional way that an appraiser says, oh, here's the three most common. Mm-hmm. Most mathematical models within an AVM are going to look at somewhere, let's call it 10 to 100, maybe even more. But, mm-hmm. They're looking at a bit of a larger set of comps because statistical models need more than three observations to work properly. So in some ways, they're just trying to find what homes are similar to this home, what did they sell for, and how do we adjust for differences? It's really that simple. If you really look at an adjustment grid in an appraisal, you kind of follow that same logic through. The AVMs are just using a number of different statistical techniques to get to that same underlying logic.
Okay, good. Do you want to tell us anything about the possible flaws with these models and then maybe some use cases? We talked about that a little bit off air, and we've seen the residential single-family home real estate business become much more institutionalized since the Great Recession. This is the AVM thing is, I think, a critical component of making that possible. So maybe you want to speak to that a little bit.
Let's see, first question, what are some possible flaws? The first thing that we all say in the modeling industry is, garbage in, garbage out. So if the data in your area is not particularly accurate or it has a bias in one direction or another, the model's going to suffer for that. So it really is a question of having good data. It raises a lot of problems, actually, in the non-disclosure states, because actually getting the true sales price can be a bit difficult. So, if you ever wonder why.
By the way, speak to that if you would.
Sure.
How many non-disclosure states are there? I think this has to end. This is one of the problems with real estate around the world. We've had many clients ask us, why don't we talk about international investing? And those markets are so opaque, it's ridiculous. It's very hard to understand the value because the data is just not there. The U.S.
Exactly.
is a very special market in that way. But there are still some places where you have these non-disclosure areas. Which areas, if you know, are non-disclosure? And gosh, there's got to be a movement to stop that. We've got to make this stuff public so everybody can really know value. But, go ahead.
Yeah. So I think there are, the number's not exact, because some states are sort of on the border. I think there's somewhere around 15 to 17 non-disclosure states, mostly in the Mountain West and Southwest, South Central U.S. Texas, Oklahoma, Utah, places like that. I don't know the full list offhand, but it's generally focused there. Your data is pretty good on the coasts and in the upper Midwest. Most of that is all publicly released. But in those non-disclosure states, as you hinted at, the sale prices is not a matter of public record. And to get that, you needed to do a number of ways to kind of derive what you think the best estimate of that sale price was. So you can see how not having that exact value can lead to higher errors in your automated valuation models. And
So how does the algorithm work to try and get data in non-disclosure markets? Now, see, even though the public record may be non-disclosure, there are still other records. There's still multiple listing services, there are still various websites that do have data. So it's not completely opaque, is it?
No, it is exactly what you said. You're looking at the MLS, and depending on where you are, sometimes upwards of 90% of single family residences go through an MLS. So if you have access to that MLS as a data aggregator or an AVM builder, you've got certainly some good information there. There are other public records, such as when the mortgages are recorded. You can assume some loan-to-value ratios based on the way the mortgage has been recorded.
Yeah, that's. I'm glad you mentioned that. I wanted to speak to that a little bit. But don't forget your train of thought, okay? So look, if the typical mortgage is 90% loan-to-value or 80% loan-to-value, the software can estimate what the purchase price was because it knows the recording amount of the mortgage. So if the mortgage is $80,000, that home probably sold for $90,000 or $100,000, right?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. And okay. That's something that you then triangulate. You'd say, okay, I had that property address. What did I find in the MLS? Oh, do I have an MLS sale in there, $400,000? Hey, I've got a match here. this looks pretty good, you know, or, oh, this was a for sale by owner property. Maybe there's a little less weight I need to put on this one, or maybe we won't consider this sale. So there's some sort of internal algorithms or scoring that, that goes into the data to judge the quality of that imputation or estimate of price. But just kind of circling back around to something you said, I do really think there should be a movement to make that public information. And I think it needs to start with real estate professionals in those states who say, you know, look, our industry in this state is suffering. You know, we're potentially losing out on investors. The market is a lot more opaque than it is in one state over. You know, why can't we have this information?
So. Yeah, no, I'm really into transparency. So that would be a good movement. Okay, so I can see how the software could do a much better job than a human at weighting and determining valuation from different data sets and so forth. So that's really good. That's where the AVM thing might be better. But what else does it do? What else do these algorithms do?
So one thing that you can also pull out of the algorithm is you can get some pretty good local measurements of price movements. So that's often a real help in this, where sometimes, you know, appraisers, depending on how well they know an area, may often make some pretty rough assumptions on how quickly the market's moving in a certain neighborhood or a certain county or city. And with an AVM, because of the volume of data you have, you can really test those assumptions and come up with some really localized price movements and price trends, which is something that in the AVM we developed, the Atomize AVM, we've really tried to focus on the locality of price trends to say, we understand, you know, we're based here in Seattle and we know that, you know, one neighborhood over from another neighborhood, price movements can be considerably different. So really, a well-constructed AVM will give you an opportunity to understand how different neighborhoods are changing and in what direction.
Good. So now you work with Atom Data, and we've had Darren Bloomquist on the show many times, and he's spoken at a couple of our conferences. Is there anything you thoughts that you have, and I don't know if this is your area or not, on, you know, where the market is going, or where certain markets are going, because you just spoke to that sort of momentum aspect of the data?
Yeah, so I think one thing that's important to know is that most AVMs are not in the business of making predictions. They're inherently sort of backward-looking. There are a lot of AVMs out there that actually kind of specialize in doing what we call retro AVMs, where they will do a value in the 10 years in the past if you need that for some particular reason. But making forward predictions is, you know, there's much more goes into what a house is going to be worth a year from now is certainly dependent on what it's worth now, but there are a lot of macro and microeconomic factors that get into that. So that isn't something that we here at AVM Analytics have generally been doing. You know, we like to think that our Atomize AVM will be very quick to pick up changes because of the locality at which we run that, and the fact that we're using, you know, very, very localized models to pick up on price changes. But we're not in the business of trying to guess what it's going to do a year from now, because there are just too many things that go into that.
There are, and this is why predictions are usually worth the napkin they're written on.
Very often, true.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do you see as, you know, things coming up in the industry in terms of the future of all of this, or just the industry in general?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that seem to be happening in the industry. I think the continued use of image data, and as this consolidation happens in the industry, the bigger players are going to come up with a larger and larger sort of time series of photos. So as time goes on, suddenly they're going to have photos on 20% of homes, and then 40% of homes, and then 60% of homes.
Right.
To the point where that stock of image data is going to become a lot more useful for the models. That's one thing. I think another...
Before you move on from that one, you know, that's interesting. The computer will be able to tell how attractive the house looks. Why wouldn't they? Dating sites can tell how attractive people look. And, you know, there are certain, by the way, sort of universals in that. I mean, everyone has their own taste, of course, but there are some broad principles of, you know, what our eye likes to see. You know, there's the golden ratio. I mean, you know, we've all heard of that stuff, right? So
absolutely.
Some of this stuff is not really subject to opinion. It is just the way most people view the world. And so the image data on housing will someday, the computer will give a grade. It'll give a comp extra points for having good curb appeal or being neat and clean versus sloppy or decorated well or whatever, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's sort of where it's headed. And I think you can also then start to say, maybe we don't know if people like pink or white better. But what we notice in the model is that pink paint actually has a 5% price premium once we control for all these other things. There may be some kind of latent human activity that at some point we can also try to understand, do that in the future. So I think that's really one of the big avenues that people are going after. I think a number of the firms are using drones to try to get a better sense of some of the very microspatial factors that contribute to a housing. You know, is it next to a non-residential use? What does the view actually look like from the top floor? You know, so there are some of these things that maybe the photos don't show you, but a real thorough remote sensing analysis of the property could as well. So those two are kind of in a similar vein, but expect a lot of innovation in that front. And then I think there's probably some movement headed, you know, short-term rentals, Airbnb is becoming such a big deal in cities. You know, here in Seattle, it's definitely a big deal. So I think some people are starting to talk about how that might contribute to value and trying to understand how those entitlements in general, you know, zoning changes, ability to sublet a part of your home on Airbnb. Now, how do we start to think about that in an AVM? And, you know, I think we're in the very, very early stages of that. But as I'm sure you know and your listeners know, that can contribute a lot to value.
Oh, sure.
And how do you properly capture that? And that's always been a big question in the AVM space. And, you know, we might finally begin to a point where, again, the data is there to start to answer those questions.
Yeah, you know, I have seen many articles on the short-term rental effect on markets, and some say that it's hogging up inventory. Too much inventory has come out of the housing stock that's being used as short-term rentals, and it's not really part of the market anymore, the traditional market. So when a home buyer wants to buy a home, there are fewer homes available because some of that stock has been sucked up. There are some interesting effects there, no question about it.
Yeah, absolutely. About a year ago, I was living in Australia for a while, and particularly in Sydney and Melbourne, that it's a very big problem in some of the better neighborhoods, you know, near the beaches and things, where you know there are some neighborhoods that are approaching 20% Airbnb owned unit or utilized units in terms of apartments and condominiums. So absolutely.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's something to definitely watch for. And it's something, like you said, we don't really even understand it yet. We don't even understand the impact. And also that use, that zoning can change virtually overnight. So you got to be really careful of what you price into the market because of that, because there's a lot of controversy over that and a lot of fights, a lot of wars going on at various city councils and in various neighborhoods. So we'll see how that all works out. Are there any questions I didn't ask you? Anything you wanted to share with our listeners in general?
I think good question that you've asked, certainly. I think one thing that I'd like to stress to at least clients of ours and people who interact with our AVM is that while the value is important, always look at the number value that an AVM gives you, but look at the confidence interval or the range as well. That's equally important or maybe more important when you're evaluating an AVM. If that range is really wide, that gives you an insight into the model and that gives you an insight into how good the modelers think they're doing in that area. So if you see a really wide range or really wide confidence interval, your takeaway should be, well, yeah, they gave me a value, but they're not even that confident in it. So that can really be a good place to start understanding, at least at a very simple level, how good the producer of an AVM thinks they are in an area. So I would urge your listeners or anyone interacting with AVMs to, if it's not provided to you, to ask for that confidence interval, and then use that as a gauge kind of to how much trust you should put in an AVM.
Right, absolutely. You know, one question I do want to ask you before you go is, when we have been talking, this whole context of this conversation, I assume, is really about the value of properties. But our listeners are investors. What about rental prices? Do you work on that side of the AVM world at all, or are you strictly working on sales prices?
At the moment, we're strictly working on sales prices. Rents, I think, are certainly an interesting place to be as the investor class grows, as people start to understand the fundamentals of the market more, they start to understand that their home is, you know, not just a place to live, it's an income-generating asset. The biggest issue with the rental market is data. You know, rental transactions are not public record anywhere. And what you do get, you know, if you look at Craigslist or even one of the larger sites, all you get is list price. You never really find out the contract price.
Right.
Nor do you know the duration, nor do you know what's happening when there's renewals. So the data is just a lot cloudier in the rental space. And I think that's why those type AVMs have been very slow to develop.
Yeah, I agree with you. And there are some websites out there that pretend to do it, but it's just the data's all over the board. So
very true. Very true.
Yeah, no question about it. Give out your website, Andy, and tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, so they can find us at greenfieldadvisors.com. And then our subsidiary, avmanalytics.com, is where we do all of our kind of real estate data science work. Any of those two websites will get you to the interesting work we're doing. And then, you know, obviously Adam Data Solutions as well. They're our data partner, and they've got a number of different interesting products for investors, owners, anybody interested in the market. So yeah, please do check us out.
Fantastic. Dr. Andy Krause, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Jason, for having me. It was wonderful.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.